what may be the most pressing scientific problem of the moment.
I want to just mention also the Koch brothers fund other programs, and it's not always clear how some of these things are funded. There's a Cato Institute organized TV series called Free to Choose. And yes, it is named after the Milton Friedman series, but it has this modern host and narrator, the conservative economist Johan Norberg, who is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. It aired on WGBH in Boston in 2015, at least, and other PBS stations. There was little or no disclosure that board member David Koch funds Cato, and that public broadcasting stations were airing the Cato Institute very slanted series with a very slanted conservative narrator, this Johan Norberg from Cato, which is essentially an arch-libertarian institute. There was very little disclosure in this free-to-choose series of multiple programs about all that background.
Well, this is really what the Kochs have been aiming at for the most part. If you go back, I mean, and what the book tries to do is it's a history. It explains that for 40 years, they have been trying to mainstream very fringe ideas they have. So they've been building up institutions like think tanks, like the Cato Institute, like the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, and endowing programs in universities and colleges. They've now endowed something like between 220 and 300 such programs, and endowing state-based think tanks. There's certainly at least one in the Boston area that work sort of in concert to legitimize ideas that were only a few decades ago laughed at because they were considered sort of the lunatic fringe of American politics. But if you keep working at it as they have, it's playing a very long game. Keep pouring money in year after year after year, building up scholars that are pushing their point of view, publishing books that are pushing their point of view. Eventually, it becomes mainstreamed so that you get a station as good as WGBH airing this as at least what deserves what they might argue is, well, let's give equal time to all views. Well, and then the next thing you know, it gets much more currency and legitimacy. That is really what the nature of their project has been. And it's had a big impact on American life and American politics.
Just as we begin to wrap up here, I just want to ask you briefly, the 2016 election, it's coming up. The Koch brothers and their cohort billionaire oligarchs have been very frustrated that they lost ground in 2010 election, 2008, obviously, 2012. They had victories in 2014. But this election game is not always working out completely in their favor, although it seems that the influence on the world of ideas and the sort of PR propaganda parts of their operations are successful in spreading ideas that have turned into the Tea Party, for example. What do you think about the 2016 election?
Well, I think that they've, to some extent, helped create the problem that they're facing themselves, which is you've got two candidates who are taking off in kind of popularly. One is Donald Trump and the other is Bernie Sanders, both of whom appeal to Americans in different ends of the political spectrum, partly because the voters see them as not owned by anyone. And I think that the public is somewhat disgusted with the idea that so many of the other candidates appear beholden to private interests. And so by having imposed themselves so much on the American public, I think really most Americans don't want to have 400 of the richest people in the country of any viewpoint telling them who the next president should be or what direction the country should take. And so you've kind of got these rebellion candidates really right now, and who are, and I see Trump particularly as exploiting this opening. He's his own billionaire, and all these voters say, I like him because he doesn't owe anything to anyone. and the rest of the Republican slate on the presidential candidates who are the major ones anyway, have all gone to the Kochs to kiss their ring and try to get their backing. And people, I think, don't like that.
Jane Mayer, congratulations on coming out with this colossal compendium of reporting that took you, I believe you said, 5 years to report. It's now in print, entitled Dark Money, The Hidden History of the Billionaires Behind the Rise of the Radical Right. Our guest today was Jane Mayer. Jane, thank you so very much.
So great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Jane Mayer's been a New Yorker staff writer since 1995. She worked at the Wall Street Journal, where she covered the bombing of the U.S. Marine barracks in Beirut, the Persian Gulf War, and the fall of the Berlin Wall. She's the author of the 2008 Times bestseller, The Dark Side, the inside story of how the war on terror turned into a war on American ideals. She's the co-author with Jill Abramson of Strange Justice, and the co-author with Doyle McManus of Landslide, The Unmaking of the President, 1984-88. In 2009, Jane Mayer was chosen as Princeton University's Ferris Professor of Journalism. She's received a Guggenheim Fellowship, as well as the Goldsmith Book Prize, and many other prizes for her work, including the James Aronson Award for Social Justice Journalism, the Toner Prize for Political Reporting, and recently, the I.F. Stone Medal for Journalistic Independence. That's Jane Mayer. Her new book out this month is Dark Money. For Sounds of Dissent, I'm John Grebe. Thanks for tuning in today. Stay tuned for Sports Saturday, coming right up next. I welcome any calls, questions, and comments after the program at 617-552-3511. That's 552-3511. Thank you, and stay tuned for Sports Saturday.
Massachusetts is near the back of the pack in a new survey that ranks the Commonwealth at 48th among states when it comes to retirement and affordability. The survey by the personal finance website WalletHub says taxes on Social Security and pensions can make it difficult for folks on fixed incomes to retire here. But analyst Jill Gonzalez says the state ranks in the top 10 when it comes to quality of life and health care.
But there is the sense that you kind of get what you pay for, both in terms of quality of life, which ranked 8th, and healthcare, which ranked 7th best. So definitely enough physicians, nurses, in-home services to go around. You'll just be paying a pretty penny for them.
In terms of overall rankings, which take all three factors into account, Connecticut ranked last in New England at 48th and Maine the best in the region for retired people at number 30 nationwide. The survey says nearly a third of working Americans haven't saved anything for their retirement. According to Gonzalez, that can be an important consideration when planning where to retire.
Those people that do retire and really haven't accounted for how much they're going to need to live on have to go back to work. So you want to be in a place where they're very friendly to hiring older people.
Florida was rated the best place to retire, and Rhode Island came in dead last. For Public News Service, I'm Mike Clifford.
All right. You're listening to 90.3 FM, WZBC Newton. We're 10 minutes past the 1 o'clock hour. You're listening to Sports Saturday with Connor Hawley, myself, Anthony Iotti, and Jake DiLorenzo. We're going to start off by talking some Super Bowl. I mean, we probably going to do this a lot more next week, but might as well get some initial thoughts as we're sort of fading out of talking about conference championship weekend and really getting into the game at this point, as I think both teams are probably going to fly out to California, I'm guessing Monday. That's usually when it happens. So what do you guys think initially? I think the Panthers are obviously the favorites coming into this one, but how do you feel about the game overall?
Yeah, the Panthers are definitely the favorite, and that's being reflected, you know, with the betting lines. They're going up every day. Is, you know, basically everyone is going all in on the Panthers. Yeah, I think it's up to five and a half. It might
Something
even go as
like
high
that.
As six or maybe higher. But it started out at Carolina minus four. So clearly everyone is really behind the Panthers. But I think one of the products of that kind of 2 week gap in between championship weekend and the Super Bowl is that all these storylines kind of pop up. There's all this time to generate that, and you know it's an interesting one, as it always is, because this year you have, you know, Peyton Manning in what he admitted himself might be his last game, and what I think is going to be his last game. And then, you know, Cam Newton, who made some interesting comments this week, kind of bringing race into the equation, which is always a dicey subject.
Yeah.
Really going to be a lot going on over the next week.
Jake, not too pleased about that?
Bringing in race for... I don't think anyone brought it up, really. I mean, obviously, there's going to be people thinking about it, but...
Yeah.
Like that public like that? No, you're a quarterback.
Yeah, a quarterback
who plays... You don't play any different than anyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, look at Andrew Luck, for instance. He's just as mobile as a African-American quarterback.
Exactly. And
what's the point of it?
I think you make a good point. I don't know Russell Wilson, but I think Newton would be just the second quarterback after Doug Williams, African-American quarterback, to win a Super Bowl. When I looked it up, as I said, not sure if what Russell Wilson is. You don't have to get into that. But Doug Williams, obviously, a while ago. But I agree with you. I don't think it's much of an issue, or at least shouldn't be an issue. And what surprises me is the fact that Newton himself brought it up. I feel like, as a quarterback, it's your job to make it about the team. And that's what I've always respected about guys like Peyton, Eli, and Brady, is that they really try to deflect all the praise. I think that's what's so different about Cam Newton, in my mind, is that he sort of embraces everything that comes his way.
He hurt himself with that comment.
You think so?
A lot of people, I mean, what's the big thing this week? Just people ripping on him for being cocky on the sidelines.
And the excessive celebrations at times.
I mean, for me personally, like, I don't mind that as long as you back it up, and he's backed it up.
Yeah, he's backed it up, definitely.
MVP of the league, and we're taking the team to the Super Bowl with only one loss on their record.
Yeah.
But, I mean, then this comment, it's just... How could you go any lower than making a comment? Like,
yeah, really? I mean, my thing with Newton is that, like, I think he'll get a lot of backlash if the Panthers don't win the Super Bowl with the way he's been all year. You know, as you said, Jake, he's been really cocky. And it's fine, I think, if you can back it up. But prior to this season, I don't think, at least I never thought he would be an MVP caliber quarterback. I thought he'd be solid, but I didn't think he'd be this good. So I think it'll be very interesting going forward to see if he's able to keep this up with the guys around him, which I think they have a good chance of since the Panthers are set pretty well. But I think the best has yet to come in the Cam Newton saga.
Yeah, I mean, I've been extremely impressed by him all year. I think every time I doubted him, he kind of, you know, answered back by winning another game that I thought that, you know, where Carolina might slip up, just because, you know, all year when I looked at the weapons around him, and I know many people felt the same way, there really isn't a whole lot there on that roster on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, the run game's been, like, underratedly very good this year, though.
It's been very good, which was also surprising, because when they lost D'Angelo Williams in the offseason, everyone thought that would be kind of a hit to their running game.
But Stewart, he looked out of shape even in a little bit, right? He got
And he was never a star. Not that he's maybe a star now, but he was, you know, he was never even this productive, I guess, playing behind D'Angelo Williams. And the receiving core is not, you know, up to par with, you know, rosters like Green Bay, even the Giants, Arizona, you know, with... Ted Ginn, you know, Funchess, Jericho Cotchery. I mean, a couple of these guys are retreads, and then Funchess is, you know, kind of an unproven commodity coming into the year. But in terms of Newton's comment that he's, you know, he's incomparable because, you know, he's an African-American quarterback with his skill set, I don't really understand that because...
But if you think about it, you're not African. You're a quarterback.
Well, yeah, right. First of all, I don't think the race should have anything to do with it. He's a quarterback of the NFC champions.
Sports, too?
Like, right,
that's
even just taking, you know, take what he said and look at it, That's not even true. I mean, like Connor mentioned, Doug Williams won a Super Bowl. Russell Wilson won a Super Bowl. And then there's even been more quarterbacks who have
been the past two Super Bowls for, you know.
Right. But yeah, there have even been more quarterbacks who have gotten there and, you know, almost won. Donovan McNabb almost won. Steve McNair.
And you even have just, like, great quarterbacks who will always have certain games that we'll remember. You know, Michael Vick. For all the crap he's had off the field, he was a very good quarterback for a while with the Falcons, and I don't think his contributions with the Eagles went unnoticed. So there's that. I think it's just a weird thing to bring up at this point, and especially I think it going into the Super Bowl now, him to say that, it's sort of like he wants to add to the hype going into this game. And it's not necessarily him talking about race. I think maybe almost just wanting to bring more attention to the game itself. That's just my personal opinion. You can think about it what you want. And on that note, if you want to call in, our number is 617-552-4686. We're talking Super Bowl, so feel free to come in with picks, opinion, what have you, and we will discuss it.
Feel free to tweet at us as well, at WZBC Sports. We'll be checking for any comments on there.
Indeed, at WZBC Sports. So flipping to the Broncos side, do you guys see Peyton Manning really being able to affect this game in a positive manner, being able to take it over, revert to his old self? Do you think that's possible, especially with the two-week break off? As we've seen, I think he's played his best when coming off these sort of long breaks. He looked the best at the beginning of this season, I would probably say, throwing the ball. He turned really bad really quickly. And then when he came back from the injury, we saw a few flashes when he took over for Osweiler, but still really nothing compared to what he used to be.
I would say no. I don't think he's going to come out with a vintage performance. I really just don't think he's capable. It's not that he won't be prepared or doing his best. I think he's just really, really limited. And when you watch him, you know, watching him on Sunday compared to, I remember years ago, it's night and day. It's a little bit sad to see, but he's gutting it out. I just don't think he physically has it in him, and it's nothing beyond a physical limitation with him. So I don't think he's going to be able to come out and throw for 300 yards and four touchdowns. What he's going to have to do is, I think, stretch the field a little bit more than they did against New England. I think the Patriots gave them a lot of room underneath to work.
That was my issue with the Patriots' game plan in that game, is because especially the first drive, Peyton had like all day underneath with those like 10-yard throws, and the Patriots weren't covering them. So if Carolina's able to give them that, I think the Broncos take that all day, those short throws.
They will, if it's there. The problem is, for Denver, I don't think it's going to be there. I think, you know, though New England does have a couple of solid linebackers, you know, Jamie Collins, even though he got beat in coverage a couple times on Sunday.
Yeah.
Carolina's linebacking core is pretty much unmatched, especially in coverage. I mean, we know what Luke Kuechly can do.
Thomas Davis hurt, though. Take that into account now.
Yeah, Thomas Davis with a broken arm. He says he's going to play. His coach says he's going to play. But we'll have to, you know, wait and see what happens with that. But I don't think that room is going to be there for Denver on Sunday.
I mean, and the thing to also mention is that Peyton, obviously, the Panthers' weakness is the deep ball. I mean... They can't, because Norman, bit of an overrated cornerback in my mind, if you think about it, their safeties in general, and their front seven is what's weakest. I mean, their front seven is the strong point of their defense, by all means. And Peyton can't throw the ball beyond the strong seven, that front seven. So it's going to be, he's going to have to be really precision with his passes, really pinpoint in order to win the game. And the whole thing with Denver's offense would be no turnovers, because how often do you see Carolina gain these pick sixes? I mean, Luke Kuechly's had two of them in the past, in both playoff games, and how dynamic they could be off the turnover and the points they always put up off of turnovers as well. So the main concern for Denver would be turnovers. You have to keep the football. You have to stay safe.
All right, and now we have a call coming in with a question. So what was your question, ma'am? Hello? Hello?
Going once?
Twice? All right, we'll try to get him back on. But anyway, as we were saying with the Broncos, I think the running game is really how they're going to have to try to beat the Panthers, although it's sort of pick your poison here. Since, as you said, Anthony, they're really good in pass coverage. You have Norman, who I think is probably the best cornerback in the league this year, I would say. You disagree?
I don't know about that. I mean, we were talking about this last week with Graz a little bit. I think he's a bit overrated because Panthers are susceptible to the deep ball a lot. And you can even, what we tagged back, us Giants fans, was the game against the Giants. If Odell caught that 60-yard touchdown pass, he would have had, what, 180 yards, two touchdowns with Josh Norman on him the whole game?
I think the whole game would have played out differently if he made that catch. I mean, dropping that ball set Beckham off for the rest of the game.
I mean, my whole opinion with that game was if after Beckham dropped that ball, Norman probably just kept chirping at him the entire game, you know, for dropping the pass, that would have gave them a lead. But I just think Norman's a bit overrated because you see how the Panthers can get beat on a deep ball a lot, which is, again, always brings up the serious debate of Brock Osweiler with an arm,
right,
with a cannon. He throws seeds. Him and he would be the better quarterback strategically against the Panthers.
All right, now we're going to try to take that call again. Let's see if two times the charm. So what was your question, man?
Oh, how's it going? I have a question for Jake.
All right, so we have a question for Jake. He's here. What's up?
Hey, Jake, how do you feel about John Scott?
I can't hear him.
The All-Star game.
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Jake, what do you expect from, what do you call it? What do you expect from John Scott in the All-Star game?
Oh, so we got a John Scott question from the All-Star game. No, thank you for the call.
I'm not a John Scott guy. Who was that? Anthony, did he say his name was?
He was asking for you.
Yeah, he was asking for me. I think that's my friend who's calling in talking about John Scott.
I mean, I was going to get to him at some point. We were going to go Super Bowl first, but do we want to go into hockey now?
I mean, we could go based on the caller.
We could go based on the caller.
Take the question, and then we can go. We always go back.
Yeah, so let's start with Jake, since that's who it was directed at. What do you think of John Scott in the All-Star game?
I mean, it's the way the system goes, so
yeah.
I think you have to let him play. I think it was bad to do what the NHL did by trying to bury him a lot. But they are letting him play, though. That's the new turnaround, right? They are going to let him
play. Yeah, they are letting him play.
But
yeah.
I just think the guy got voted. He got voted in. What are you going to do?
Right.
You have to respect the way the system goes.
No doubt.
I think about that with the NBA even this year. Kobe Bryant doesn't deserve to be an all-star, or at least a starter, but for that matter. But he is. And I think you have to respect the way they do these things.
Yeah, I think it's a little different because we saw Jeter, I don't think, in his last year should have been an all-star based on his performance. But he obviously earned that right, and I see the same with Kobe. John Scott is literally the NHL fans toying with the NHL itself.
Right.
Like, he is the worst player in hockey, I think. He is the last, like, living goon in the NHL. and the fact that... I mean, they turn this on themselves the way they have this set up, that the fans basically vote in the captains. I think it's a little ridiculous. And he was on the Coyotes, and then the NHL initiated a trade between the Coyotes and the Canadiens.
And then,
and then he got demoted in Montreal because apparently there's a loophole saying you can't play in the All-Star game if you are in the AHL. But they overturned that after all the outcry from the NHL fans. And it just seems like a silly situation. They're definitely going to change it after this year. But I agree with you, Jake. I think they got to let him play. I think it's going to be hilarious to watch.
No, you would know a lot about this stuff.
Well, okay, I don't know about that. But I think it's ridiculous what the NHL tried to do. I mean, if you're going to have a system where the fans vote, then let the fans vote.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can't then say, oh, no, we're not happy with who you picked. They can't play. What do you mean they can't play?
Yeah.
And they think that they do that for a way to give respect to players. And usually it always works out the same, too.
Right. But, I mean, think about it this way. One of the purposes of the fan vote is so the fans feel they have a voice and the fans get to see who they want to see in the game.
Mm-hmm.
The NHL cares about the ratings on the game. That's what they care about.
The fans
voted for John Scott, doesn't that mean the fans want to see John Scott and might actually watch the game, even though they might, you know, might be a little bit out of ridicule, they kind of want to see him going up against the Crosbys and Ovechkins of the world.
And
if they're going to tune into the game, they're going to tune in. I mean, they voted him in, let him play. I don't understand why the NHL had to make a mess of this.
I mean, the NHL could have even made it, like, put it in a positive light or tried to make a joke out of it, almost. I think they could have advertised the crap out of this, like having just like having John Scott in a bunch of commercials and stuff like that.
The last time you've even seen that, though.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's just
it's not like he's a player on his way out. Like you see,
right? It's not like a Kobe.
Yeah,
like Kobe or Derek Jeter even got voted in.
Yeah, it's not like that at all. I think they could have just tried to been humorous with it rather than taking it so seriously. But I just wanted to go over some John Scott
stats. Plus, doesn't he get for that too? There's definitely
he does. He gets a money incentive. He has a family. He has two kids.
Yeah,
he's got another two more on the way.
Can't take that away from him.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, with him not playing, although he got voted in, would he still get that incentive afterwards? That would be my main concern.
Yeah, I agree.
Are they screwing him out of an extra paycheck?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just bad looks by the NHL, and not to mention we can talk about the Dennis Weidman hit at some point today. But looking at John Scott's career stats in the NHL, 285 games played, 11 points, 5 goals, 6 assists.
He's a hitter.
And a plus minus of negative 18 and 542 penalty minutes.
This guy is arguably one of the worst players in the NHL.
Yes, yes, no doubt. Just some amazing stats there. And he may be the only guy I've ever seen. Like, I think this year when he got elected as the Pacific captain, he was like averaging like 5 minutes a game, like ice time. And like in this day and age, the NHL, you never see that. Like even the fourth liners probably skate 10 to 15 minutes. So it's just unreal that he's still making it around the NHL, but credit to him and being able to get in. So
this is like, it's like if the NFL had a, you know, like the Pro Bowl fan vote and like Charlie Whitehurst was voted in as like the quarterback or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, is it a little weird? A little strange? Definitely. But it's what they open it up to.
You can't go against the system.
Right. The system that they created, they can't go back on that promise.
Like,
they just can't.
Feel free to change it once the year's over if you find a flaw. But like while it's going on, you can't go crying. So there was that. I think overall I'm kind of tired of most All-Star games and the Pro Bowl especially. I think it's just... Like you saw that
the baseball's the really good one.
The baseball's the good one, and I think it part of it is because it means something, you know.
But do you agree with that? That it should mean home field in the World Series?
I like that a lot because it makes the All Star game worth it. And I guess baseball's also the one sport where you can do it serious because of injury reasons. I mean, guys aren't getting hurt in a baseball game very often compared to, especially because they only have a pitcher throwing no more than 20 pitches. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the advantage to baseball too. You can make it serious. I mean, football could you? No way you could make that a serious game, or even basketball for that matter.
I mean, the Pro Bowl to me, it's just ridiculous. Like one thing, it's at the end of the year. Like what guy after enduring an NFL season wants to do that? Like
free trip to Hawaii.
That's I suppose that's true, but like. All the Patriots bowed out of it, and like I understand like the outcry that, you know, at least some of them should go, the ones who are perfectly healthy.
I don't blame them, but
I don't blame them necessarily. Like even Malcolm Butler, who it's his first Pro Bowl, coming off an unbelievable season, he didn't even want to go, and it's just like I don't think it means to anybody.
I don't like that though. If you get elected, and you should be honored to at least show up.
But it's like you've spent 4 or 5 months going through absolute hell with your body, and then you're putting it on the line for this game that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, but they're not playing hard though. I mean,
it's still football.
It's a routine practice.
Like, so, if it doesn't really mean anything, you don't want it to be physical, I would honestly watch, like, a Pro Bowl flag football game rather than an actual Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about ways to fix it, because it certainly is broken, regardless of who chooses to go and who chooses not to go, yeah, I would rather see some sort of, you know, maybe that flag football thing and a skills competition above anything else.
Yeah.
I want to see I want to see these quarterbacks... You know, try to hit targets from 50 yards away.
Yeah.
Like bullseye targets, not like, you know, receivers with a cornerback on them. You know, I've seen enough of that by this point. You know, what else could you do? Something with receivers, for sure. I mean, the NFL could exploit the heck out of that. Kicking, even, I would watch. I think that'd be kind of cool. Punting. I mean, they got to do a skills competition. They got to do something like that.
I mean, they used to have it, and I think they had a lot more of it. like, I want to say 10 years ago, I thought it was always a big thing, the quarterback competition and stuff like that. And I remember watching it. It's just so much more interesting than the game. Same with the NBA skills competition, right, and dunk contest. It's way better than the actual game in my eyes.
Right. I think that's the that's the model they should follow.
Mm-hmm. Even maybe making, like, you could even switch it around and make the game, those competitions, like, the main event, rather than the game itself.
I mean, I think it has a lot to do. It's just the sport itself. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
In a sport like football, because, they only play 16 games a year compared to the next sport after that. The minimum's 82 games.
Yeah.
It's just so hard with football that, you can even make the argument they could do it just someday, like, before the season starts, before training camps. That way, sometimes even the guys, I remember hearing that argument.
Yeah.
That way players are kind of motivated to play football again after a whole off season off and playing with the best of their it's just
You could even do something like I think just having it like the in between the week between conference championship weekend and the Super Bowl is just sort of ridiculous, because we're all already thinking about football. If the NFL really wants to do something and get people interested, do it in like May, like nothing, like everybody sort of wants football back after a while, and just putting a game in there like. I think it might spark some more interest, personally.
Yeah, the problem with that is the players aren't.
They're
back in shape.
They're not going to want to go.
They
back
would never.
Too.
See Eddie Lacy in May.
May 80 pounds above playing weight.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I mean that could make it even more funny. But I suppose your point stands. I think the NHL does it. Decent job making it the 3-on-3. I think everybody wants to see like the cool moves the guys could make if it wasn't such like a hard hitting game, you know.
I think the 3-on-3 overtime has been great, and I think they made the right move by making the All-Star game the same way. I think it's going to be fun to watch, not because it's going to be like a real game. It's still not. It's still going to be 13-10, maybe even worse this year because it's 3-on-3.
You do like 3-on-3 better overtime? You like that better?
Oh, yeah.
I think so, because I don't like the shootout.
You're not turning overtime. It's literally, one team goes up the ice with a great chance.
Yeah.
Either the goalie makes a great save or they score. And if they make the save, they go down the other way, they do the same thing. It's back and forth.
Yeah, because I personally think like penalty shots are like fun or whatever. But in this day and age, it's become so oversaturated with shootouts. It's just like...
I don't like the 3-on-3 person.
You don't
really
like the 3-on-3?
I just think that it's less about hockey. That's more about individual. It's kind of almost like a shootout. The guy who gets a beat on.
No.
I think in a way it's not as much. I like the 4-on-4. I thought it was easy enough to score. And I mean, the only argument I could make was making overtime longer than 5 minutes. Though I think that was a little too short for an overtime game, but I like the 4-on-4.
If you wanted to do that, I wouldn't be against it. If you want to do 4-on-4 for 10 minutes, that would be another way.
I like that more.
The players aren't going to agree to it because they're not. I mean, it's just so tiring, I think, after a while. More ice time, exactly.
I really like the 3. I'm surprised to hear you say that.
I like 4-on-4. That was just me. That was just me, though.
I've yet to turn off a game that's going over.
Yeah, same.
4-on-4, I guess I didn't really either, but now I'm like, oh, this is good. One way or another, this is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. It's like...
it makes it more entertaining. That I'm not disagreeing with. It's just from a personally.
I mean, I just want to avoid the shootout at all costs, because it's like somebody made this analogy. It's like a football game. You have it ending with like a throwing competition between like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. It's like, who wants to see that? I'd rather see an actual goal be scored.
Yeah.
Especially when so many fluky things can happen in a shootout, and just having an entire point depend on that seems a little ridiculous to me. But that's just me personally.
Yeah, I mean, I think the shootout, I think, was a very good idea in its time. I mean, when the NHL needed to kind of get the fans back and get scoring up.
A lot of people still like it, though. It is fun to watch a shootout.
Right, but when they had all the lockout issues about a decade ago, and they had to increase scoring, about the same time, this was one of their innovations, and I think it was a good one. But, yeah, like you said, Connor, maybe now we're trying to find ways to kind of phase it out, because, like you said, it is a little ridiculous that these points, which are huge for the playoff race, come down to... One-on-ones. It would be like you used Brady and Manning. David Ortiz and Mark Teixeira have like a
home
swing
run.
Off. It's like, I mean, against like
it's
a
not it's not
pitcher.
Even hockey anymore, really,
no.
in
no.
my eyes. It's just it's stuff you do at your local pond. So that would be my biggest thing, is trying to get that change. Because last year, like, you even have a few teams that, I think, personally, since I'm a Bruins fan, the Bruins finished ninth with 97 points last year, which I think was a lot compared to, since some teams make it with 94 and 95 some years. And I think they got out by 1 or 2 points, and you look, and they had so many shootout losses. And it's just kind of, it's actually become the difference between teams not making the playoffs.
Yeah, no, and I'm a Devils fan, and you know, they weren't close to making the playoffs last year, but they set the record for shootout futility.
Yeah.
They were like 0 for 13.
Oh, really?
Well, not all in the same season, but it was like maybe 0 for 9 in that season, and like it stretched into this year, the first 3 or 4. It was unbelievable. Like, with such a good goalie in Schneider, I know they don't have a lot of scoring, but the fact that they can lose that many shootouts in a row was shocking to me. And, you know, not that they were going to make the playoffs, but they could have at least been in the hunt. It would have been more
interesting. Exactly.
It would
have been more interesting down the stretch. And it would just be interesting to see. I know we'd never be able to know, but which teams would actually be able to endure overtime more and be able to, like, do sudden death and come out on top more rather than those with shootouts. Because I look at a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins, like a team that's so skilled, but I feel like never has been able to really put it together on the defensive end. Mm. Like, I feel
you
like
all
the
that money up in three guys, though.
Yeah. I think a team like that is so much more... takes so much more advantage of the shootout system than I'm not sure, like, just a team like maybe the Panthers who are like, don't have anybody in particularly skilled, but are just like a really good team.
Yeah, definitely.
So
how about them as a surprise this year? They're number one in their division.
Aren't they number one? They're on top of the
number two in the conference. Yeah, it's been unbelievable. Don't even know who do they really have.
Florida?
Yeah.
Aaron Ekblad, who won the Calder last year, he finished ahead of Johnny Goudreau. Ekblad, I think Luongo is their goalie now, right?
Luongo is their goalie. Good. He's in the All-Star game.
Revived his career entirely.
Yeah, because
Luongo, former Islander.
I thought that he was pretty much done after Vancouver, and then he went there, and I don't even think he did that well early on. I think he was a backup goalie for a little while, and now he's really turned it on.
You even think about it. After that great Olympic, he's declined ever since that Olympic, I would think, right?
Yeah.
Ever since that, he had an amazing Olympic where they won it.
Yeah.
And I think ever since then, he got, you know, he was still good on Vancouver a few years after, but every year he got worse and worse because Vancouver got worse and worse.
Well, yeah.
What's funny about it, this is something my dad always says, is how much Vancouver screwed up what they had. Remember, they had Luongo and they had Schneider. When Schneider was still young and
he had not totally
proved himself, but he had played very well in his chances, and they knew he was a big prospect coming out of BC. So they traded him to the Devils for the first-round pick, number 9 pick, which, if you think about it, isn't that much to get a star goalie.
Yeah,
you
know, Schneider was exceptional.
You get one pick.
I still remember...
How valuable is the first-round pick in hockey, though?
Not as valuable as an all-star goalie.
Yeah.
No question. The number 9 pick.
I mean, if you have an all-star goalie in my eyes...
Well,
even goalie's
the most important position.
Right. Exactly.
It's like a quarterback.
And especially in the day and age when they have so much equipment, if you just have a guy who can move pretty well, has got a good glove, then if you're like even a 7 or 8 seed in the playoffs, as we saw with Jonathan Quick,
you got a shot.
Yeah. I mean, it's that important. Game,
huh? So they traded Schneider and didn't get much back, and then they got rid of Luongo, and now he's a star again.
Yeah.
And they're sitting with Ryan Miller. I think Vancouver's actually.
And now I talk about
year.
A guy who's going down since.
What's Miller? 37?
Yeah.
He'd be that old.
Yeah, and they're middle of the pack right now. They have 51 points through 50 games, so they're pretty much exactly at .500.
Yeah.
They're not really going anywhere.
For a while, Miller anchored the Sabres there, and he was exceptional. But I think you're right with Vancouver, because they had something really good that year, 2011, when they played the Bruins. And I remember Luongo had a terrible series, but when they brought in Schneider, Schneider was able to turn things around a little bit for him.
They were probably that mid to late 2000s most consistent good team in hockey, regular season wise.
Yeah, they were so skilled.
San Jose was up there.
Yeah,
they never went to the playoffs, but they were up there.
They just had
Detroit, of course,
a really good team. I think the Sedin brothers were just, and I mean they still are, but it's just not the same anymore than what they had back then.
Well, now what they're waiting on is Thatcher Demko, I guess.
Oh, right. That's true.
I'm not sure.
Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, I don't know what his plans are in terms of leaving after this year or staying for his senior year at BC, but I would have to think he's the future there.
Yeah, I think it's a second round pick. Do you think it depends sort of on how BC does this year? Do you think if we win a national championship that Thatcher would be gone?
I mean, because next year the Lava should be projected to be better than they were this year, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they had a good freshman recruiting class. Last year was only their recruits, right? They don't have relatively an old team, I don't think, on the ice.
BC? Well, the issue is they're very junior heavy right now. Junior and freshman, really, but focus on juniors in terms of next year. If you think about their defenseman core,
yeah.
Savage, who I know isn't really a prospect, so he'll probably stay. But Santini is a major prospect. So is Mikoshin.
Well, it's the same. Well, then it's like the same boat with Demko. Will that group stay for one more year?
Right. Yeah. There's a worst case scenario where almost all of them leave. There's a best case where almost all of them stay, and it's more likely to end up somewhere in the middle. Especially the scorers too. Fitzgerald. I mean, you need him to stay.
Yeah, and then you have. I mean, Cangelosi has sort of been on and off, but I think he's still an important piece, and he's a top six guy. I think he needs to bulk up a little bit.
Was he drafted anywhere? I don't believe he was.
Let me look. I'm not sure. I thought was going to be. And I mean, he still is a really good player, but his freshman year, he came on pretty strong. I thought he was one of the best freshmen when he was here initially. But let me look at that to see if he has been drafted.
I mean, I know Gilmore, the Minnesota Wild prospect, Callinan with the Blackhawks, but none of those guys have really starred to the point where they're ready to jump to the NHL. Like Chris Callinan would not make the Blackhawks right now, in my opinion, just because of all the talent they have.
I don't think a lot of them
would.
Right,
so I think Callinan stays.
Yeah, the Blackhawks, tough team to make.
Tough team to crack, right?
Yeah.
I think Gilmore stays. So really, the issue is probably Mikoshin. Now that Florida's kind of turned things on, I still think they could maybe use his help on the blue line. So I think maybe Mikoshin goes, and I think Demko is very up in the air. Other than that, I think the core will stay. In terms of Santini with the Devils, they have the Devils' strength right now is, besides Schneider, young defensemen, which is obviously what Santini is as well. So I'm not so sure he's ready to go either, because he'd be ticketed for the AHL. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. He's not cracking that lineup right now. So I think most of them will stay. And in terms of Demko and Vancouver, if I had to bet, I'd say he stays, but I'm afraid to see.
Yeah, well, I mean,
to be wrong on that.
For all we know, like if they're getting as desperate as we think they might be with the goalie situation, or think they want to really get him started early, he might have some leverage there as far as a signing bonus or what contract they'll necessarily give them. Since I know for basically any college hockey player that's been drafted, you can leave at any time, mm-hmm. And they can sign you. So you always have that in the back of your mind: is how much money are they going to give me? And for all we know, Demko's sort of just waiting it out with the Canucks, because they might give him a heck of a deal if they're not or if they don't think they're maximizing their time with the Sedins in their prime. So. Let me think. Do we want to go back to football or take a short break? Or
Football is the popular topic.
Football is the popular topic.
Because we got on this subject by, how to fix the Pro Bowl a little bit.
Yeah.
Then we went into the NHL All-Star.
Yeah, we got the caller. The caller screwed
us
up. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate the call nonetheless.
We do. Once again, if you want to call and get us on a tangent, 617-552-4686. 617-552-4686. Also follow us on Twitter at WZBC Sports. Spelled exactly how you think it would be.
Yeah.
So
I've got a football topic to bring up.
Definitely.
Relocation.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Rams. We saw with the Rams.
San Diego staying
back
another
to LA.
Year, right?
Yeah. So the Rams going back to LA. For 2016 in Inglewood,
Coliseum,
the LA area.
Yeah, I was wondering, are they playing the Coliseum?
You type in on Google LA Coliseum. They're there. They're already listed as the team that plays there beside the Trojans.
I think they'll be there for 2 or 3 years, and then they'll open up.
Well, the
new
plan's
stadium,
2019,
right?
I think.
So 3 years.
Yeah, I think it was 2019 was the plan.
That's interesting, because the Coliseum is like just
biggest,
one of those
biggest venue.
Yeah, but it's like I don't know. It just doesn't fit that prototype of what an NFL stadium is.
I thought it would have been where you at UCLA played. I thought that was going to be the stadium of choice.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Having been to the Coliseum, it is sort of in downtown LA.
Have
I think
you been there?
Yeah, I mean, I saw it before, and it's like I think it would just be easier for people to get to, based on my impression of it.
Also
it's just such
biggest,
a popular
right?
location, and it's very big.
Right.
But I think it's I don't know. I just think it'll be interesting playing NFL games there.
93,000 capacity.
Yeah.
I mean, it even looks weird, Minnesota playing at that stadium. That
yeah.
looks weird a lot.
Yeah.
That, obviously, that doesn't look like a pro stadium at all.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that is strange.
Like, that's such a college.
Playing UCF Bank.
It's such a college-looking stadium.
Yeah,
where the
agreed.
Vikings are playing right now.
Well, so the Rams moving there, but also San Diego sounds like they're probably going to have to move, because if San Diego, the city, doesn't put up
well, they're saying they want a new stadium,
but I don't think I haven't seen any indications that San Diego as a city is going to offer to build them a billion dollar stadium like they can get in Inglewood.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to go.
I think they're gone.
And then the last issue then is the Raiders, who
they better stay in Oakland.
I mean, I'd like them to stay, but you know, now that LA is off the table, you're hearing talks about Vegas.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's talks that they might end up in Las Vegas, and it in a way makes sense because
Al Davis, I mean, what's his face?
Mark Davis?
Mark, he would do it too.
He would. Well,
the right offer, I think he would absolutely.
Yeah.
The city, I think, is offering to build a 65,000 seat, billion dollar domed stadium.
I think you have to do a dome.
Well, yeah.
Vegas, you do.
But in terms of, you know, kind of a fit, I think it is a fit because the Raiders have always been kind of associated with kind of being like the bad boys, right? Kind of the counterculture a little bit.
Well, all those Super Bowls, those were the LA Raiders, or that was Oakland still?
Well, either way, the Raiders franchise.
I'm not sure. Even, yeah, the Raiders franchise, I think you're right. Yeah,
like
it's I think Davis has brought in the mantra of just like going against the grain sort of team. Yeah.
That's a Vegas kind of team.
I mean,
right?
I think that's the only stadium that allows metal on their fans to walk into the stadium.
Yeah, it's a dangerous fan base from what I've seen. That that Buccaneers Raiders Super Bowl, I think those are some of the two of like the, I don't even know how to describe, just like rough around the edges fan bases. I think the Raiders obviously more than the Buccaneers, but even though the Buccaneers are one of the worst, I think, in the NFL. So I think it'll be interesting to see. My thing was, if they couldn't have both Oakland and San Diego in LA, right? Two division teams in the same city. They're in the same division.
Right.
That would be so weird, I think,
right.
is if you're playing. Just you're gonna have, if you're LA, you're gonna have so many games in there. It'd be ridiculous.
Clippers Lakers though.
That's true.
Clippers Lakers, same exact division. Now that the Clippers are good, I mean the Lakers are terrible. But
when was the last time they were both good? At the same time.
Those last 2 years, maybe when Chris Paul first got to the Clippers, I think in 2009 and or 2009 or 2010 or 2010 or 2011, when the Lakers still had another year or two with Kobe and Gasol and Bynum.
Yeah.
I mean, they both divisions, they shared a stadium.
Yeah. Right.
Both divisions.
Yeah.
I mean, basketball, football, though, well, who knows what the difference.
Yeah, I think it's just like, so is like having all three of them there still on the table?
No.
Okay.
LA's, well,
you couldn't
no.
Do, how could you do that, though?
No, you can't. All three can't be there.
There's no way they could
do that. Because, like, actually, there would be a possibility that
I think
would have, like, 16 weeks of football in L.A.
Yeah,
like,
no, that
there would be a football game every week.
That won't happen. It'll get close, though, with the Rams and the Chargers. Maybe not 16. But
well, I mean, it'll be like the Jets
it'll
and
be like
the Giants,
13 or 14.
Probably. Yeah.
There'll be a couple weeks where, you know, once they're both on the road, something like that. But anyway, I think, right, it's off the table that all three go to L.A., but what I think could still happen is if San Diego gets a new stadium to replace Qualcomm in San Diego and they stay, then that opens up an L.A. spot where the Raiders technically could still go if they don't have a deal in place in Oakland or Vegas with a new stadium. So that, I guess, isn't official yet, but it looks like, for all the world, that the Rams and Chargers are going to be in L.A., and the Raiders will either be in Oakland, probably with a new stadium to, you know, move out of the A's Coliseum, or they'll possibly go to Vegas. Right now it's just a rumor, but I could see it gaining momentum.
I'm a little surprised, I think, that they gave San Diego the initial nod to leave over Oakland, because the Coliseum in Oakland is so bad. I hear that's like one of the worst stadiums in sports. And not only that, you already have the Niners there. You're already sharing fan bases anyway.
Right.
San Diego, I feel like it's far enough away from LA, and there really isn't, I mean, there's no other football team in San Diego. So I was a little surprised why Oakland wasn't given that initial nod to try to go to LA first before the Chargers.
I mean, and I just think that Oakland, with the fan base already, it's such a great fan base, really.
Yeah.
It's a diehard, loyal fan base.
Yeah.
On their history, two of their three championships were in Oakland. I mean, the third one was in L.A. You still have, like, the Madden history is all in Oakland. I just think with the history itself and the fan base, that's such a hard team to move.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at San Diego's got one of the worst fan bases in all of sports.
Well, I loved...
In terms of the city.
Yeah, I loved...
Especially for football, nonetheless. I mean, Phil Rivers didn't even want to be there for a lot. There was
Eli,
so many discussions.
Eli didn't want to be there.
Oh, Eli, he got out of there immediately.
Yeah, wasn't it was Philip Rivers for Eli, right?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was the
Rivers,
trade?
One and two.
And two more picks, which...
No, one and three. One and three.
Which right? Well, what do you
Eli mean? Was one overall by San Diego, and Phil was three.
Four. It was four.
It was four.
I mean, it's an,
not that it matters.
We
really.
Want to talk about an interesting quarterback comparison. Obviously, like Eli's I always
better.
Saw them as similar, like
Eli's
sort
better.
Of skill sets, but obviously Eli's better with just the way he's been able to perform. I think in the clutch and in the playoffs, but. Yeah. I digress.
If you look at stats, maybe you give the edge to Rivers, but if you ask me who I want in a big
yeah.
game or in a fourth quarter, I'm taking Eli every time.
Yeah, because, I mean, Rivers had a couple of those, like, dominant seasons when the Chargers were number one in the AFC under Schottenheimer.
What was it, this year? He's the fastest quarterback to that whatever passing yard milestone, I think.
Yeah.
I think he's the
puts up numbers.
I forget what the yardage is. Maybe it's 30,000
yeah.
yards. I think he's the fastest quarterback to it.
Yeah, and I think when the Patriots lost to the Giants in the first Super Bowl, the Chargers gave him a good game in the AFC Championship.
Yep.
I think they only lost by nine or so.
The rumor with that game is that Phillip Rivers was playing on a torn ACL.
Really?
I don't know if that's true.
I mean, you were playing in New England, too, so to put up a fight against...
That
yeah,
17-0.
Yeah, it was impressive in itself.
I'm going to try to confirm that, but I remember hearing that he was playing on like a torn ACL.
And the Patriots were unbelievable. They were probably two touchdown favorites, I think, in that AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
But as I was saying about the Chargers, I think Keenan Allen and Phillip Rivers both came out after the announcement and were basically like to the San Diego fans, like, if you guys want us to stay, you got to come out this season
yeah.
and support us and be at the games. So it just even goes to show how there's the players even recognize yeah. how bad the fans are.
That's
they're not even going to acknowledge. They're not even going
to
acknowledge how great the city is to play in.
That's why I think San Diego's the team you have to move.
Okay,
not Oakland. I just
yeah.
think Oakland's fan base and the history in Oakland opposed to their history in L.A. is just far greater.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
They should stay.
Yeah. So you have the stats.
Well,
or then yeah.
I'm reading an article. It's an article from 2008, so the beginning of 2008, where it's saying right after the game he had arthroscopic surgery on his right knee. No, so he could play in the AFC title game. So it was before that, and he would need surgery on the torn ACL on the same knee after the Pats game.
Yeah.
So maybe it was partially torn.
He might not even have been able to play in that Super Bowl if they had beaten the Patriots.
Yeah.
So that would have been.
Change history.
Interesting. Yeah, it would have changed history.
Are you trying to say Phil Rivers deserved to be in that Super Bowl more than Eli Manning?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely
is that what you're
not.
Saying?
Absolutely
are you trying
not.
To make an argument
different
right
conferences.
Now?
They
no, different conferences.
I don't know. Are you trying to make an argument?
I will say I think Rivers has had the unfortunate scenario of playing in the same conference as Brady and Manning. That
yeah.
has hurt him quite a bit since he's. He has even beaten Manning once or twice in the playoffs, I want to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, there was 1 year, I think, where San Diego was like 14-2. I don't remember who they went
like
down
to. Like the last
to.
Few years with LaDainian Tomlinson, maybe.
Yeah,
yeah.
Schottenheimer, like you said, Connor.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to the Patriots 1 year. They're twice in the playoffs before, I know.
That I can definitely find. I'll find the numbers on that. But yeah, he has had that unfortunate circumstance. Also, Big Ben. But Big Ben's someone he has to beat because they're considered in the same class, or at least maybe they were.
That's the great. That's
arguably
the greatest
beat.
Quarterback class of all time is just because of those three alone.
Those three, four Super Bowls between them, five. Super
yeah, they
Bowl
were all in the same draft, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Big
yeah.
Ben was I think 20 something like that, early 20s, maybe high teens in that draft.
Yeah, he was somewhere in that range. Were there any other big quarterbacks in that class? I
there,
mean, three
there,
is obviously enough.
There
but.
Could have been, but just those three alone.
I mean, those three alone, if you get a quarterbacks that I think are
yeah,
definitely top half, they're like all definitely like top half every year. You got two Hall of Famers, and then you have some other years you can't even get a decent quarterback. Like,
right.
You look at in
Jake
recent
Locker,
years,
Blaine
Jake
Gabbert,
Locker. Yeah, and
kind of
like
drafts.
not even close. So just having all those three guys come out the same year.
Yeah. Well, there was one year, the 09 playoffs, San Diego, I think. I don't remember their record that year, but they lost to the Jets 17-14 in a game where I believe their kicker, Nate Kading, missed
that was
like
Phil Rivers
three
then?
Field goals.
Was it
09?
That,
yeah.
Was that the, was 09, okay.
Yeah, 09. So I remember they lost to the Jets at home in a huge Jet upset.
Yeah.
That was one of the years the Jets went with Sanchez to the AFC title game. Yeah, like you said, yeah, they lost to the Patriots a couple times to end their season. They lost an OT to the Jets in 04, which would have been Rivers' rookie year, I believe. So
I think as you say, yeah, I think as you say, Jake, that I don't think Philip Rivers has ever had a really good playoff moment like that you ever remember him by.
It's like that with a lot of quarterbacks, like Matt Ryan, for instance.
Matt Ryan,
had his. I mean, they
Carson
won 5 years
Palmer,
in a row.
Really?
yeah, they won 5 years in a row. The Falcons in those, you know, the year they go 13-3,
and you made it once to the NFC Championship That's game. That's all you had to show for it.
So many quarterbacks you can list.
Yeah, postseason success.
Dalton even now a little bit. I mean, think of the last 4 years, 5 years, 10-6 is the worst they've been since now.
They haven't won anything.
They haven't won a playoff game.
Yeah, exactly. You talk about a team that, I mean, they're not, I don't even know what to think of them going into next season.
The Bengals? They'll be there again.
You think they'll be there again?
I think their defense is that good.
Yeah.
They're such an overall good team.
I think they did, if they were just a little bit more disciplined, they would have been in the playoffs.
Boy, oh boy.
I think they would have had a good shot of knocking off the Patriots with how bad their offensive line had played. Mm-hmm. And then who knows with the Broncos.
Is great.
Fantastic. Yeah. As I said, just undisciplined in between the whistles.
Definitely.
Marvin Lewis is still there.
I just can't believe that after that playoff game. I feel like that's such an indication of the coach.
Still going strong.
I mean, just to play devil's advocate, what could Marvin Lewis really have done, though? I mean,
there for 12 years and hasn't won a playoff game.
If Jeremy Hill doesn't fumble, the game's probably over.
That's true.
So, and yes, you do have to control your players. I can't totally excuse Marvin Lewis, but if Hill holds on to the ball, which Lewis really has nothing to do with, that's a physical error.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen even though you try to avoid it as much as you can. The game's over, and we're not talking about this, and they go on to the second round. They would have played New England, probably would have lost, but he would have had that playoff win at least.
I'm just saying with him, though. It's been 12 years and not one playoff win.
But they're always in the playoffs.
They're always there, yeah.
They don't have a quarterback, a franchise quarterback.
He's good enough, though, to be your quarterback. That's the thing.
But until he wins
you don't need
the playoffs,
to go looking anywhere.
There are some guys, though, is the thing that's like the playoffs coming. I don't know. They're not able to turn on that switch.
It's at some point, you have to... I mean
even Carson Palmer won his first playoff game this year, and he looked shaky hell in that
terrible.
Game.
No, he wasn't good. No,
he and then he was, you know, just he was worse against Carolina.
Yeah,
he had three picks.
Four? He had like.
I mean, any way you slice it, the game was 49-15.
The game was over pretty early.
Carolina again proving that no one comes close.
Well, that's how a lot of these Carolina games go.
Everyone thinks that this is the game they'll lose because they're not that strong offensively in terms of personnel. They're not. And then they blow out these teams.
It's first half blowouts. It's actually kind of how they do it. They just jump out to these huge leads. I guess they're just more ready to play in a lot of situations.
Because even the Seahawks game, like they were, 31-7?
31-0 at halftime.
31-0. Although as close as the end result of that game was, that wasn't a close game, though.
No.
I mean, you can't come back from 31 points off of Carolina. You can't do that.
No.
You knew they were going to win despite how Seattle was coming back.
Right. It never really felt like the game was in doubt.
No.
Even though Seattle did put up some points.
No matter the final score, you didn't think that game was in doubt at all.
The only time you've seen a comeback that big, I believe, was Frank Reich and the Bills. I remember Jim Kelly, I think, got injured. They were down 35-3.
What, in 92?
One of those, 93? Yeah, 92. It was in their Super Bowl, you know, their run of four Super Bowl losses. They were down 35-3 at the half. Jim Kelly was hurt. Mm-hmm. Frank Reich came in. The game was in Buffalo against the Houston Oilers. Everyone thought the game was over, and Buffalo won in overtime 41-38, you know, probably the greatest comeback in NFL history.
In a playoff game, yeah.
Certainly in a playoff game. And that's the only time it's happened. So you knew, once Carolina jumps out to those leads, they're very good at holding it.
They're not going
to
blow a lead like that.
No.
That's the thing you have to consider.
Yeah.
It was 31-24 was the final result.
Right.
They weren't going to, a 31 point, no, there's no way they could. Their defense was just too good to blow a lead that big.
Yeah.
And Cam Newton is good enough of a clock manager because he can
always. Because
they run the ball. So
right.
You knew the game wasn't in jeopardy at all. And that's the thing with Carolina. They always. If Denver's defense could hold Carolina's offense to limited points, and by that I mean field goals, not touchdowns, Carolina's a great red zone team.
Oh, yeah.
They always get in the end zone. If Denver could just limit them to field goals, keep them with its.
I think
it's going to be a very close game.
Denver,
I think it will.
Denver cannot play from behind in this game.
No, because Payne's not. You can't throw the ball. You can't throw it past 10 yards.
And Carolina with the lead is so dangerous.
And they're weak.
So dangerous.
Yeah, because Carolina's strong suit is the front seven, which is what?
Oh, yeah.
That first 15 yards, arguably. Because anything past 15 yards, Carolina is susceptible, and the Broncos can't do that at all.
Yeah, no, what's funny is I was hearing someone say the other day, you know, all of Peyton Manning's teams, even in Indianapolis, their defense, you know, his defense has never been as strong as it is now.
No.
But that's because Indy always built it as
offense.
A pass rushing. Well, no, a pass. Yes.
Yeah, well, you have Freeney and Mathis.
Because
yeah.
They knew that they'd be playing with a lot of leads in the fourth quarter, and they needed those pass rushers to just put games away. They didn't need them to shut out teams.
Mm-hmm.
They knew Peyton was going to put up
27,
30, 35 points every game. And it's kind of the same thing here in that they're built around their pass rush, and yet it's a different Peyton.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this, you know, that defense with the Peyton of old would be unstoppable. But
I think they'd be an undefeated team. Honestly,
they might be. But it reinforces the fact that Denver can't play from behind because their defense, although they do stop the run well, they do everything well. But their defense is really best at playing from ahead and getting, you know, letting Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware.
Well, just keeping them in the game. Just keep them in the game. That's it.
I think they got to play with a lead, to be honest with you. They can't let it be.
I think Cam's going to throw one pick, though. I'm going to say that.
He might, but how many times is Denver going to turn the ball over?
That's the thing. That's
if they want to win, it better be
zero. That's what we were saying at the beginning. Denver can't turn the football over because Carolina scores after every turnover.
Yeah.
Every